I think the opportunity for all of us to kind of take a step back, like this has been a very tumultuous, if you will, past year, not just coronavirus, but just the racial inequality issues and everything that's coming up. And just for everybody to kind of take a breath and take a step back and just to look like where we can play a role in being a part of the solution and not the problem and, you know, in continuing the divide. Like we're all human beings. We're all fallible. None of us are perfect.
Welcome back to the podcast. My name is Jared. You're not here for me. You're here for my co-host, Miss Christine.
Ms. Hello, hello.
How are you? You sound like you're in a cheerful...
I'm good. This New Year's Eve. I'm not even letting you finish sentences. This coffee is definitely working.
Yeah, people might hear this in February, but it was New Year's Eve when it was recorded. So, hopefully Christine survives the evening after this. We believe that she will. But our guest today is Dr. Stephen Euler. Now, I call him Steven because he and I grew up and we're friends, and maybe he'll share that story and humble himself or not. I don't know. Or maybe he'll pretend he doesn't know me, and rightfully so. But the reason we want to have Steven on the show is he and his colleague are doing something pretty cool in Memphis, Tennessee. They're doing something that's called Radar EMS LLC or Radar Services. And yeah, we're going to talk about that. But before we get to that point, Steven, let's just take a big swim in Lake U. There's a lot of people listening to this show. They're going to be like, I don't know, Steven. So let's just start there. So for someone that's like, Steven Euler, who's that? Dr. Steven Euler. All right. Let's just start, you know, when you were a young man, you know, let's just get that backstory, if you will.
Wow. So are we going back to our childhood together? Yeah, like if you can, kindergarten?
Yeah. When you were a young child growing up on the banks of the Tennessee River.
And all the mischievous things we got into until you left me. We won't go into that story, though.
Thank you for bringing that up. I appreciate that. The friendship abandonment going into this episode.
I still cry in the shower, but, you know, we don't talk about that.
Well, I don't cry in the shower, but I am glad you're on the
show. Well, that's good. I'm glad you've been able
not
to move
anymore.
On.
Although there's been times when I've had episodes with Miss Christine, and I probably should have cried in the shower after. But anyway.
Oh, no.
No, no.
You know, what's great about the shower is that they can't see you cry because of, you know, the shower, right?
Well, it depends on where the shower is, but that's okay.
It lowers the water bill.
Our water bill is higher than normal, by the way, Christine. I don't know if there's something going on in Florida, but. Hopefully you're not experiencing the water bill that I am. So.
Oh, no, I haven't seen that. Okay. I'm glad on the lookout now.
I'm glad to hear that. So, Stephen, go ahead. Take us back and fill us in.
Yeah, so, geez. Yeah, originally from Chattanooga, but ended up, I guess, maybe I'll just fast forward. I went to medical school here in Memphis, Tennessee, which is where I'm currently located, but didn't stay here after med school. But while I was here, I got connected up with a guy by the name of Dr. Rick Donlin. And that was kind of an interesting path how that happened. When I first moved here from med school, I didn't know anybody and was looking for somebody to mentor me more from a spiritual aspect. And so I was kind of praying for an older guy. I didn't care if they were a doctor or not, just wanted somebody older to mentor me, kind of help me progress in my faith. And so I talked with a couple different kind of singles pastors that I was connected with and told them what I was looking for. And specifically didn't want somebody that was just that I was going to kind of become a notch on their like mentorship belt or discipleship belt, if you will. And so anyways, about halfway through my first year of med school, I got connected up with Rick, and the guy that introduced us said, hey, I think I found somebody that would work out. He's older. He's looking for somebody to mentor. And oh, by the way, he's a doctor. And I was like, sweet. And so Rick and I started meeting together once a week at a coffee shop and talk about everything in life. Like, what are you going to do with your life? And who you dating and who you shouldn't date and all those fun things. But so I guess just a quick background on him. He came to Memphis back in 95 with a few of his colleagues and helped start a federally qualified health center that was geared towards the medically underserved of Memphis. And that was something that him and his three colleagues desired to do with the gifts God had given them in the medical field, and was to serve kind of the least of these. And so by the time I met him in 2001, 2002, they were, I guess, 6-7 years into it. And really, as I got to know him and his family and what they were doing with the clinics, had really bought into it. I had an Air Force commitment. And so I ended up matching in internal medicine. That was my residency training. Did that with Uncle Sam in the Air Force. I started off at Keesler Air Force Base in the lovely Biloxi, Mississippi. That's the closest I've gotten to live to the ocean. But a young lady called Hurricane Katrina ran me out of there. So it was short lived. Mm-hmm. So ended up in the Midwest in Dayton, Ohio, and did my time there. And then as I was finishing up my both my residency training as well as my 3 years of payback with the Air Force, had stayed connected with Rick and was interested in trying to start kind of a similar clinic to what he was doing in Memphis. And so he pitched several different places to me, actually Miami and Compton, and then he also pitched New Orleans. And there were some other folks that were interested in trying to get a similar kind of faith-based clinic towards the underserved in the Ninth Ward of New Orleans. So I moved there for a couple of years and helped to make some progress, but just for different reasons didn't work out. And so I ended up coming back to Memphis and working for Rick at one of his clinics. And I guess about a year and a half into that, there were some different things that came up, and we ended up, there was a group of us, including him, that started a new clinic in the city, similar faith-based, but just in a different underserved community than where his current, where the clinic was, the previous clinic was, the Christ Community Health Services Clinic. And so the clinic was titled Resurrection Health. And at the time we had more providers than we had patients. And so that's kind of a challenging thing. But it just so happened that there was a local hospital, community hospital, that was in the same neighborhood, community, if you will, where we were trying to start the clinic. And they were looking for a new ER staffing provider. And so we made a bid on it and were awarded that. And so I guess that was in December of 14. I went from being a clinic provider to being an ER provider. And so while we were there, one of the things that we got connected with was the local Memphis Fire Department and some of their folks who, when they weren't working with the fire department, would work in the local hospital. And it just so happened some of their leadership was working there. And so one night, one of their guys was talking with Rick and saying, hey, you know, each year we keep seeing this increasing number of medical related 911 calls go up and up and up. And, you know, the typical response is that, you know, if you call us, we're going to haul you into the ER unless you refuse. So you can call for pretty much anything and they'll take you to the emergency room of your choice.
Right.
But that's not necessarily always the best place. And they don't really have an avenue. There's not really an avenue to do something different. And so, you know, if they're going to continue to keep their response times down, they got to buy more ambulances and hire more people, which gets expensive for the city. So Rick pitched to them and said, well, what if we provide the physicians and you provide the Memphis Fire paramedics and we ride in one of your vehicles, but don't send us in an ambulance to the calls that are deemed to be low acuity or non-emergent, but you send us in like an SUV or something.
And right.
And then we can take that medical screening exam that normally happens in the emergency room and bring it to the patient wherever they're at and make a further decision and take on that medical liability and risk and help that patient navigate to maybe a more appropriate resource, which isn't always the emergency room. And so that kind of began the whole RADAR. And so Rick is the one that came up with the RADAR acronym, which is, as you noted, Rapid Assessment, Decision, and Redirection.
That sounds similar to something here when I used to dispatch, we would do during special events and like whenever it'd be real busy, especially being in Daytona, because we dispatch for the whole county and you can't move around, like say bike week, you can't get around like Main Street and stuff, like it, you just can't make it. So they would have like kind of like SUV type vehicles that sometime it'd be like the 210 or one of the lieutenants might go and then they can get on scene and then they would, you know, make patient contact and then, you know, say, hey, really for this, you're not going to die. you can drive yourself, you know, if you can drive yourself or somebody else can drive you. And then they could cancel the ambulance that we had, like maybe on standby, because yeah, the resources that you need for a lot of cities in these counties, it's just overwhelming because the money's just not there.
Right.
So, Stephen, I want to back up a little bit because what you're saying is pretty radical and pretty interesting in my mind. Prior to diving into that a little bit further, let's just back up a little bit. First question is how do you know me and why are we still friends?
Oh. He's wow. Trying to avoid that.
You know, I mean, he really wants me to pull out the stories, apparently. I was trying to give him the benefit of the doubt, but he's got me going back.
We handle the underserved, and I'm like, well, you're still friends with me. I feel like you're under. maybe that's why I'm considered underserved.
No. So Jared and I, we did kindergarten and first grade. Were you still there in second grade?
He stole your crayons?
I'm not.
We were like BFFs. We didn't have the necklace or anything, but I mean, we were together all the time, birthday parties. I still remember. I have this like vivid remembrance of Jared in this like black puffy coat. It's kind of like the you know, the new like Patagonia, like puffy coats. Like this was well before Patagonia was a thing, or maybe it was. And I just,
I'm afraid to hear this,
but yeah. Anyways, I just remember Jared. He loved that black coat. He was always wearing that thing.
Yeah. But, I think I need an SUV sent to my I was not ready for the embarrassment of the black puffy coat.
I also
black bubble jacket.
You know,
a fur hood too.
We were together in second grade because you and Eric Shirley did that duet together.
This is true. We were in the same second grade class, if I recall.
Yes. Oh, yeah. Boy. So they did, and it was like it was a talent show or something, and him and Eric did this. God bless the USA. The what's his name? I'm blanking on it.
Lee Greenwood. Yes.
Yes, Lee Greenwood.
Miss Christine has no idea who that is, by the way. Western Phillies. He's like, God bless the USA. What is that?
Oh, she's probably heard the song before.
Maybe.
I'm sure breathe. you could give us a rendition.
No, I won't do that out of sake of trying to keep an audience. But I want to bring this up too because I think it's interesting. Is Miss Christine's a big basketball fan? In fact, at one point she had an Allen Iverson jersey that unfortunately she doesn't have anymore, and maybe she'll
that story
anymore. So yeah, someone stole.
Oh, no.
But the reason that kind of parallels into Stephen's stories, Stephen once was an athlete and he had an actual basketball scholarship. So Stephen, if you want to talk about the basketball stuff, you can. But I'm curious, what did you learn from basketball playing? Because you played in college. Or you were on a team in college on a scholarship.
Yes, I was on a team. That's probably more accurate.
What were some things, if anything, that you learned from being a scholarship athlete in college as a basketball player?
Partial
partial. Right, I love the honesty. you win a black coat. Let me find it.
Oh, God.
No, but I'm curious. What are some things that you learned from that process, if anything, that translates to what you do now?
Yeah, I think one of the one aspect from my time playing college basketball, definitely perseverance.
That's good.
And I by no means I was the best player on the team, and maybe I had higher expectations for myself than I should have. I don't know, but just trying, just the aspect of making a commitment to something and sticking with it, and even when you don't feel like you want to, maybe you should try and go somewhere else or do something different. But I really got committed, I guess, to playing basketball. As far as all the different sports that I played, I think basketball really hit home for me. And I put a lot of time, especially starting like my freshman year of high school, and wanted to play at the college level. And, it didn't end up being what I was wanting it to be, but I think that I learned some, again, the perseverance and just how I dealt with that adversity. I know several of my teammates made comments to me, especially even in my senior year, just, I guess, respect for how I handled it and just realizing that I had other expectations and was hoped I don't know, there's politics and everything. And I wasn't on the right side of politics and probably could have helped to have a little more talent than what I had. So
yeah, what position did you play?
That was like a two or a three guard.
And that's interesting guard. To me, because you're sitting here downplaying it, but you did get a partial scholarship and you did play college basketball. So there are many athletes in high school that don't even make it to that level. So, it's kind of interesting.
Fair enough.
That wasn't what I hoped it would be. Dude, you did pretty good.
It was, and it was small college. It wasn't NCAA Division I. It was an NAIA at that time. NAIA Division II school. So I think that my school, it was Mid-American Nazarene University, and they've jumped up to NAIA Division I now. So, but it's still, as far as the pecking order, it's still below NCAA.
You're right. That is shameful.
But it's good.
Is that about this Bama game tomorrow?
Well, that would be football, Christine. That's not basketball.
No, I know. But it just made me think about more sports. Be quiet.
I think we need an SUV sent to Daytona. I think we'd take care of Christine here. No, I love that you made it to that level. And I do find it interesting, the perseverance of Stephen. And how that plays into kind of what you're doing now, military service and now entrepreneurship on a level and being a doctor. And you mentioned the underserved community. That your commitment to the underserved in Memphis goes well beyond just what you're doing with your career. You've actually taken it to a level that a lot of people would never even consider. And that's really immersing yourself in the neighborhoods and in the community. And let's just talk about that for a little bit. Why do you do that? What does that look like? What is that like for you? And why have you made those choices?
Yeah. So again, it kind of comes back to my time with Rick. At the time, again, his clinic is geared, as I mentioned, it's geared towards the underserved. And when I say the underserved, like the predominant insurance payer mix, if you will, of the patients that they see at a federally qualified health center are either Medicaid or uninsured or Medicare. Like it's not commercial insurance. So you don't go into starting a federally qualified health center in order to make money. It's because you have a mission focus. You have a desire to serve.
These are lower income families. Is that fair to say?
Correct. Lower income families. And it's a desire that you want to see them have just as good health care and quality health care, because they're human beings that are made in the image of God, and they deserve that just as much as the person has the best, you know, commercial insurance or, you know, the best paying job, et cetera. So when I got to know Rick, initially he had a house, you know, in one of the suburban communities of Memphis, and a physician who'd come back to do some part-time work with them and kind of help strategize made the comment to him one day that, hey, if some of y'all really want to understand and really interact and engage the patients you're trying to serve, some of y'all should really think about moving into the communities that you're serving. And like any good mentor, he turned around and looked at his mentee and said, why don't you think about that? And at the time, I was, if you're familiar with Memphis at all, I was living out on Mud Island, which is a nicer area town, quote, safer. And I was like, well, who's going to give me a loan or mortgage or whatever? And so started looking around, and Rick actually co-signed on a loan for me, and my mortgage payment was cheaper than what I was paying for rent out on Mud Island at the time. But so yeah, so I moved into one of the communities near one of the clinics, and it was actually a block away from where he moved his family. They bought a house and renovated it and moved in there, 5 kids. And, you know, there's definitely nervous things about it. I mean, you hear gunshots and different aspects, and you're just like, what am I doing? And, you know, there's potential for crime and getting your house broken into or your car broken into. But I mean, that can happen anywhere. But I think, I don't know, just I think the aspect of, like, if we want to see communities change and transform, like all the assets and the resources can't leave those communities. Like some people need to move back into them and bring their resources and come alongside. And not that we're like, I'm not a savior of the community that I live in now, but I know if my resources are here, then I can come alongside my neighbors and their problems become my problems. And I don't know, like it's, I think you asked about the motivation. It's, I mean, for me personally, it's motivated by my faith in Christ and that I'm trying to, you know, live out serving the least of these. And I'm not perfect by any means and not better than anybody, but it's, you know, it's one of those things that I was challenged with. And I think we all get challenged with different things in our lives, and we have a choice what we're going to do with that challenge. Are we going to step up to meet it, or are we going to, you know, ignore it until it kind of fades away. And I've tried to step up and own it and, you know, again, do it imperfectly. But yeah, so I mean, it's one of those things that it started here in Memphis when I was meeting with Rick, but it's followed me along. When I was living in Ohio, I did something similar. I bought a house in an underserved community, trying to live cross-culturally. And then when I moved back to Memphis, the neighborhood at the clinic that I was working at for Christ Community, none of the providers had moved into that area. And so like I was, I guess, pioneering, if you will, and moved in. And even though I'm not working for them currently, like I still live down here. And yeah, I don't know, it's been good and it's different for sure. But some of the headaches of trying to keep up with the Joneses is less of an issue.
Well, now I would say this for most young, and you're still relatively young, doctors to say, okay, no, I'm not going to live in this fancier part of town. I'm going to actually live in a lower income, you know, neighborhood for the sole purpose of I want to have neighbors and I want to, you know, relate to them and I want to be there to support them. Like that's a radical thing, Stephen. That's something most doctors are never, ever going to do. For you to take that mindset, faith or not, you know, that's a really radical decision. And I applaud you on that, because I do think that's part of the solution, whether you can, not that you're the savior, like you mentioned, in that community, but I'm sure those neighbors see you and say, this is a doctor that lives next to me. He could be anywhere else, but he's here. Like, I'm sure people notice that. Yeah. So go ahead. Be humble.
No, I don't.
Stephen's like, thank you.
What's the next question? No, it's, I don't know. You know, all of it for me, it just kind of is an extension. Like, when I came back and choosing to try and work at the clinic, the FQHC clinic, Christ Community, and honestly, even an extension of what we're doing now with Radar. I mean, when you look at our, if you were to break down the just the demographics and in the insurance mix, the majority of our patients are either Medicaid, uninsured, or Medicare. So it's a very similar, what we call in the medical world, a payer mix, if you will, you know, that I was seeing in the clinic. And so that's like, I mean, I want to be able to provide quality care for them, because it's hard. A lot of times it's hard to get private practice physicians to see folks who have Medicaid or Medicare because honestly, the reimbursement's not that great. And so, you know, they're wanting to get commercial patients, payer patients, as opposed to the Medicaid and Medicare. But that doesn't mean that they don't, you know, those folks don't need to have quality health care. And so it's been impressed upon me to seek out to try and provide that. And that's what I'm trying to do.
Christine said something earlier about, Christine, when you were doing emergency services and you were saying, you know, there's just not enough money. There's not enough budget to do some of the things that would really make a difference and an impact, even in Daytona. And here, you know, we hear about, you know, Dr. Steven Euler and in Memphis, Tennessee, who's creating Radar EMS. Maybe this isn't the most lucrative opportunity, but it's something that's needed. So what are the needs, Steven? What are some challenges that you guys are running into as you kind of try to create this thing that's needed? But we all know that, you know, there's only so much money in the pot, so to speak.
Right. So I think our current biggest challenge is trying to get sustainable long-term funding, which we ultimately believe should come from the insurance companies, because the majority of our patients that we see do have some form of insurance, whether it's Medicaid, Medicare, commercial. And ultimately, for every patient that we keep out of the emergency room and we get connected into primary care or to their specialist or treat them at home, like that saves, like that's a much cheaper venture, which means it saves the insurance company's money. And so we've had, gosh, probably close to 3 years worth of ongoing conversations with our local Medicaid, which in Tennessee is called 10 care payers, but just trying to come to an agreement on what, you know, what kind of a reimbursement should look like. And I think one of the challenges that we have is that there's not really a framework for what we're doing. There's not, in the medical world, everything is based off of billing codes, and there's not a code that you can submit that reflects what we're doing. And so it's trying to come to agreement. Well, how can we get this paid and so forth? And like you said, it's not that we went into this business trying to see how much, you know, to become some kind of Fortune 500 company, but seeing that there's a need. Obviously, as a business, you got to be sustainable if you're going to grow and if you're going to scale. And this isn't just a need, honestly, in Memphis. Like, this is a need all across the country. Sure. I'm sure, Christine, like, I mean, I guess just to give you an idea of our call volume in Memphis, the Memphis Fire Department, just in the city of Memphis, and that's not even all of Shelby County, we do 140,000 just medical 911 calls each year. And that number kind of continues to go up, I think, anywhere from 3 to 5% a year. They run 35 ambulances. And they have to cover, I think it's anywhere from 250 to 350 square miles, which is quite a large area.
Yeah.
But as they triage those calls, I don't know how y'all did that or how y'all do that in Daytona. They use a priority dispatch system here that the highest acuity call is what they call an echo call. So meaning that's, we're doing CPR. This person is not breathing. Their heart's not beating. That's an echo call. So that's the most emergent. And then it drops down using the military phonetic alphabet, Delta, Charlie, Bravo. And then Ollie the alpha Zulu. And yeah,
the alpha and the omega.
Exactly. Yeah. So the alpha and omega is like the stub toe call, right? Or I just need to ride somewhere. Although that's not usually what they say. It's usually they want to go somewhere for something. And,
yeah. Cough, cough. I might have COVID I need a cab, but I don't have cab fare. Yeah.
Yes. Yes. Yeah, yes, we have some of those, or they want to go to the other side of the city to panhandle, and then they want to catch an ambulance to come back to the other side of the city to get back home.
Spend it.
Right.
Sorry. Well,
yeah. There is some medical help there.
Yeah. But I mean, honestly, some of it is not, I think the majority of it's not based out of people's ill will or malintent. It's they just don't know. They don't have transportation. Like, that's a huge barrier for them. And they know that if they call 911, they can get access to an ambulance that'll take them to a hospital, and then they can get medical care, because they may not otherwise, they can't for whatever reason get in with their doctor, or maybe they don't know who to call. They don't have a ride somewhere. Like, it's, there's a whole litany of reasons, but the majority of people that are calling 911, it's not because that they're trying to abuse the system. It's some of it's an issue of healthcare literacy. It's a transportation issue barrier. They're not plugged into primary care. They don't know how to access the care that is available to them. And so, so it's an opportunity to really help navigate people to resources and help kind of facilitate that for them and hopefully set them up for success moving forward. So
the literacy is definitely something that people need help with, because they're really trying to keep people out of the emergency rooms if they don't need to be there because they're overfilled. And this is before even COVID happened. Yeah. They were trying to keep people out the ER. And one of the things a lot of people don't know, if you call poison control, which is a free service, you know, they can give you instructions, and everyone there is either like a physician or a nurse or some, they're all medically trained, like intelligent, personal people that you speak to there, and they can help you. And some, one of them even told me, she was like, yeah, people can even call if like their animal gets into something poisonous, or, you know, that they think is poisonous, and they can give you instructions, say, hey, just give them this and this to drink, watch this. And then if this and this happens, call your doctor in X amount of days or hours. But
yeah.
Yeah. It's just knowing about the resources too, and the literacy is very important.
Well, speaking of poison, Miss Christine, have you seen, have you seen Wonder Woman 1984?
No, I haven't. And somebody told, I had two people ask me if I saw it. And then one person told me they fell asleep on it. And I was like, why would you ask me if I saw something that you said you fell asleep on? And the other person said that they were disappointed in it. Well, so
there's a theme in this movie, whether you've seen it or not, where the villain is, the heel is basically encouraging people to grant or to wish for whatever they want. And of course, there's a caveat with that. Be careful what you wish for. I won't give away the movie. But so, Stephen, let's flip that over to you for a moment. If you could have a wish, or a, in a spiritual perspective, a prayer request, fix it, Jesus. What's the wish or the fix it, Jesus, for Radar right now? What do you got? What do you guys need?
Right. I mean, I think the biggest thing is just coming to a mutually beneficial agreement with insurance companies on reimbursement that would make it sustainable for us to not just continue on in Memphis, but to scale here as well as potentially to scale into other cities. Like I said, this isn't just an issue that Memphis is trying to address. I mean, there's cities, if you do any kind of Google search, Houston has what they call the Ethan program that's trying to address the same issue in a very similar way, you know, Los Angeles and Anaheim. And I mean, there's a whole slew of different places that are trying to address the issue of ambulance utilization and ER, you know, ER diversion, in the sense of getting people who don't necessarily need to be in the ER that are accessing the ER on an ambulance, you know, to more appropriate levels of care. So, I mean, having a breakthrough with the insurance companies would be definitely a godsend, because our funding can't last forever. And, you know, currently I think we have a green light at least through the end of June. So that gives us another 6 months of runway. But, you know, it's just right now they're getting the benefit and not sharing the cost. And we know it saves them money. It's just, you know, getting them to work with us, you know, and fulfilling the things that they say in their mission statement about caring for their patients and the community and so forth. It's like, we want to do the same thing. And this is something that we have proven. I mean, this last year we've done over 3,000 encounters, and like 60% of those people were able to safely redirect away from the emergency room, away from ambulances, get them plugged into either primary care or their specialist, or
straight to hospice. Just go straight to hospice. Did not pass go. Did not collect $200. I'm kidding.
Oh, yeah. Sometimes it's hospice, or
we
it's
hope,
just getting
we hope
to the
it's
pharmacy.
Not hospice.
Yes. Well, you know, sometimes that's appropriate. Each case is unique, but you know, sometimes it's just getting to the pharmacy to pick up medicines that have already been ordered. They just don't have a way, and or they missed their dialysis ride, and so now they need a new ride to get to the dialysis. Like, they don't need to go to the ER to get that dialysis. They need to just get plugged into their current location. So
I hope I didn't mishear you, Stephen, but you said there's 3,000 cases already where Radar's been able to successfully kind of redirect and help people in the right way based on those needs. Did I hear that correctly?
So we've responded to over 3,000, and 60% of those that we've responded to, we've been able to safely redirect. So that's, you know,
I think that's a reasonable proof of concept.
Close to 2,000.
Yeah.
Well, and before we started this back in the end of March. So I guess the blessing and the curse of COVID is that it provided federal funding, and some of that federal funding came to the city of Memphis, to which they had the foresight and the desire to get this started again. So it's kudos to the Memphis Fire Department for their desire to be innovative and to try and transform pre-hospital care.
Well,
I mean, we did when we ran the pilot initially.
Their calls too, right?
Exactly. Yeah. So it's I mean, their desire not just to care, you know, to provide better care for the citizens of Memphis, but also like they want to make sure that they have ambulances available for the true emergencies and strokes and the heart attacks and unfortunately in Memphis the gunshots and you know the motor vehicle accidents and all those other things that really do need the emergency room. When we initially ran the pilot in mid April of 17 until February of 18, we did another, you know, 12 to 1300 encounters then. So, I mean, we're knocking on the door of 5,000 encounters between the two. And again, our statistics have stayed similar that we've been able to safely redirect at least 60% of these folks. And this current go around, we've been able to only utilize ambulances in 15% of the cases. So, I mean, that's a huge help for our local fire department.
Yeah, that's fantastic.
Now, Stephen, who's doing something that interests you?
Who's doing something that interests me?
Mm-hmm.
Ooh, I'm going to start getting into my electric vehicle transit now. No, I think it's fascinating. This is like totally off topic, but since you asked the question, I've become enamored with a company by the name of Rivian. I don't know if y'all have heard of them or not, but the guy actually grew up in Florida, since y'all are from Florida, near the Indian River. His name is RJ Scaringe. He's the CEO of Rivian, but they're coming out with they'll probably have the first electric truck on the market starting June of this coming year, but they're billed as a electric adventure vehicle. But I like their ethos. I like that they're trying to think through not just kind of the current vehicle, but even like the lifespan of the battery pack that they're developing and how they can subsequently utilize it even once it's not in a vehicle. So I think they're looking at building like battery or energy storage capacity for communities using solar and using their battery packs, like retired battery packs in that realm. So yeah, it's a fascinating thing for me, like the whole electric vehicle movement and the potential for that.
Yeah, that's awesome. So, Stephen, where can listeners connect to you online and learn more about Radar and the work that you and your colleague are doing in Memphis?
Yeah. Well, I wish we had a website, but we've kind of held back on creating something until we knew that we were going to be able to go longer. So I guess my email would probably be the best way to connect with me, which is Stephen with a V, so Steven, dot my last name, which is Euler, and it's funny spelling, Euler, not Oiler. Mm-hmm. And that's at radarems.com.
And radarems.com, is that the website for what you guys are doing?
It will be.
He just said he doesn't have a website. You're like, is that the website?
I just wanted him to read basketball day.
We do have it. We do have it reserved. We have the domain reserved. So once we're ready to go live, then yes, we will do so.
Right, let me get that knife out of
you. But you can type it in now, and there's not much that'll come up. So I'm sorry.
Hey, we're on the cutting edge here. I like that.
Yes. Yes. All right. Tip of the spear.
Yeah, do you have any final thoughts for our listener?
Final thoughts? Ooh. No, I mean, just wishing folks a happy new year. And I think the opportunity for all of us to kind of take a step back, like this has been a very tumultuous, if you will, past year, not just coronavirus, but just the racial inequality issues and everything that's coming up. And just for everybody to kind of take a breath and take a step back and just to look like where we can play a role in being a part of the solution and not the problem and, you know, in continuing the divide. Like, we're all human beings. We're all fallible. None of us are perfect. And like showing more grace and showing more mercy to one another, I think would go a long way as we, you know, continue to have dialogue and try to move things forward for, you know, to improve the lives of everyone, whether they're at the top, if you will, or the affluent, or they're at the other end of the economy scale. Like, we all put our pants on the same way. Like, we're all human beings, and like, we need to, you know, seek to love one another in a more holistic way.
Well said. And Stephen, I want you to know that Miss Christine is a gamer, and you know, she just got a new gaming chair. And
it is not a gaming chair. It's just an office chair. It's not a gaming chair.
Okay, so it's an office chair.
Is it comfy? Because I'm kind of looking at a new office chair. I just got like this like black wrap thing to put over the top of mine just to hide the fact that it's so worn. But
I gotta still send him. Oh, he's still recording. I still gotta send him pictures of the old one and the new one.
Yeah, Steven, I think we need a picture for this episode of your chair.
Like, oh my gosh. You want like the like take off the
hey, you
take
know,
off the
you know if you take put off that the thing in the street, that thing will be gone in like an hour.
So. It probably would be, but you know, it's still holding me up. It hasn't failed me yet, so.
Oh, that's good. your new chair is not to your standard, Christine? Is that what I'm hearing?
Oh, it's great. No, my new chair is great.
Oh, the new chair is great. Okay, what'd you do with the old one?
Oh, I went to the curb. I took it.
Okay, it's gone. Okay, fair enough. It served its purpose.
Definitely.
Fair enough. Well, Dr. Steven, we wish you and your colleagues the absolute best in Memphis. And Christine, thank you for being part of the solution by being a co-host on this podcast. I know that's a little bit lowering of your standards to join us, but you did anyway. So thank you.
I'm here for you.
I feel like you're starting 2021 and in a good spirit. So
for sure.
Fair enough. Dr. Steven, wish you the best and look forward to hearing how things are going here in a few months.
Yeah, no, I appreciate y'all having me on. I feel quite honored. I don't know that I am bringing up your star status. I've been listening to some of your pods since Jared and I reconnected here in the last month or so. But but no, it's pretty neat to hear what y'all are doing and what you've been doing, and I enjoy it. And good luck to both of you. And yeah, Happy New Year.
Yeah, I hope
Thank
we
you. Have a new year
to have episodes that you know, meet Steven's standards other than this one. All right, Steven, thank you. Happy New Year.
All right.
Christine, of course, you are appreciated, and we wish you the best.
Likewise.
You too. Thanks.